Louis A. Aub, town manager of Fort Fairfield, whose ancestors settled here as merchants. At that time, they were known as Syrians, and we'll follow them through for a ways in our history to establish a few facts that might be of interest. Louis, where did they come from originally?
Well, they came from the nation of Syria. My people came from areas like Sida and Zahli, and that's spelled Z-A-H-L-E, and Vaskinta, V-A-S-K-I-N-T-A. Now, these are the larger communities, but, well, I refer to it like Bangor as a center, and these communities are like that, but actually my people came from a suburb of Sida.
Yeah. How old were they when they came here?
Well, it varies because they didn't come at one time. My Uncle Moses was the first settler of Syrian extraction that came around 16 years of age.
Yeah, and about what year was that?
Well, he came about 1885, and the largest migration came between 1885 and 1900. Moseyov stayed here about 4 years, and then he went back. He got my grandfather, Bolus Ferris, and my mother, Sadie, and my father, although they weren't married at that time, William, and two or three other brothers, and they came back and landed at Ellis Island in New York.
Yes, you talk of them coming here. I just wonder if there was a group that come or if they come singly.
No, they came at group. After, like my grandfather, my uncle came singly with four other friends of his, as he called them. One of them landed and stayed in Bangor, one of them stayed in Island Falls, and one of them went to Washington County in the Machias area. But then, after he had been here 4 years, and he went back, he brought back quite a group. And I suppose they came over here and they acquired enough money to pay the passage of friends and relatives of theirs that wanted to come back to America.
Yes, when they came here, they didn't settle in one community.
Oh, no.
They scattered around the country.
Well, as I understand it, when they landed in Ellis Island, or when my Uncle Moses landed in Ellis Island, they were met by Syrian merchants, and they were allocated certain territories to sell different wares that they had. Now, like I said, Uncle Moses came and was allocated the Fort Fairfield area, and they gave him about $200 worth of merchandise for a beginner to sell in this area. And as he sold this, he wrote back to New York and ordered more merchandise to sell.
Yes, well, before we get away from the port of entry there too much, let's talk about naturalization. Did they become naturalized at New York or
no,
later?
No, later time and at different times. They were very happy to become naturalized. I always use this as a phrase, and I don't want to digress any. I remember in high school that sometimes I'd come home and I'd be very disturbed at the events of life, and my mother used to tell me, she said, "You go outdoors and kiss the ground and thank God that you live in America." This is what those people thought about America, because it was a land that had given them a very good living.
Then they were naturalized mostly in Holcomb.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, this brings up the question of why did they leave home?
There was no opportunities in Lebanon, as we call it today, there was no opportunities. They were like, I would say, a lot of the farmers in Aroostook County today. They had a lot of land. They were, for that matter, land poor. We still own a tremendous amount of land over in the air, over in the area that our relatives now are living off in. And they heard a lot about America. I guess they must have thought that money growed on trees, and the opportunity was here, and thank God they did come.
Yes, we have people in of your extraction in our adjacent towns.
All over.
All over.
Yeah.
One of the things that we need to talk about a little bit, Lewis, is did they know the English language when they come here?
No. They were French-speaking, and they knew French and they knew Arabic. Referred to as the Syrian language, we refer to it here, but it's actually the Arabic language, and they could speak French fluently because Syria, for a good many years, was a protectorate of France.
I seem to remember seeing some Syrian newspapers.
Right.
They were really Arabic.
Right. That came from New York.
It was printed in New York.
That's right.
Yes. Families that live here now number about how many, Lewis? How much population?
Oh, I would say...
In the immediate area.
Yeah, I would say 35 or 40.
Yes. They were predominantly merchants. They weren't farmers.
Well, as I know, as I understand it, Romy, when they were over in Lebanon, they were farmers because they had to live off in the land. This is what they raised, grapes, olives, dates, and things along that line. And they would take their wares into Sidon, which is the larger community, and to sell for the necessities of life that they couldn't raise on their farms. But when they came over here, due, I suppose, to the field of these Syrian merchants that met them and allocated certain lands to sell, they got into the retail business. But you've got to remember, they didn't start in business right off. They peddled. They peddled all over the northeastern part of the state of Maine. I've heard my father say many times that he has walked to Fort Kent, he's walked to Bangor, he's walked even way down to Woodstock in that area with a pack on their back. And I've heard my mother said make the same thing. And my grandfather, the only one I didn't hear about was Uncle Moses, because he first came here and he got established and then he got into a store business.
Lewis, do you want to tell us about the names of some of the older families that are here?
I'd be glad to, Romy. There was the Abraham family. Families, there was two of them for that matter. There was the Solomon family, that would be Joey Solomon's people. It'd be the Gabriels, there was four or five brothers of those that stayed here for quite some time, became very successful, and they moved to California on account of the climate being too cold up here for them. There was the Aussie family. There was the George family, you might call them. There was Gabriel George and Sawyer George family.
Well, we talk about your family first, Lewis. How many brothers came?
There was four brothers. There was Moses, William, Side, and Francis.
Did they all settle in Fort Fairfield?
Three of them settled in Fort Fairfield, and one settled up in St. Agathe.
Yes, no, William was your father.
Right.
Yes. And for a good many years, I remember him being in the restaurant business.
Right.
Yes. And at that time, I remember seeing the Arabic newspaper.
Yeah, the Al-Hidda that was published in New York. And one or two families in town would get it and they would pass it to one another the next day after they got through reading it.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the Abraham family. That Bill, I remember.
Bill Abraham was a clothier. He was a late comer to Fort Fairfield. There was another Abraham family prior to him, Abdu Abraham, that had settled here for quite some time ahead of Bill. Bill's wife was a Canaan that came down from Fort Kent.
She was French?
No, she was Lebanese, and her and Bill got married, and they settled here, and they ran a restaurant for a while, and he ran a very nice clothing store after that.
Why I brought this French in here, Lois? You told us a moment ago that French and Syrian was your original national languages, and many of your people talk fluent French,
right,
even after they settled here.
Right, because of peddling in the French country, and it came in very helpful to them, too. For a time, it was quite hard because they spoke the Parisian French. And after a while, then they got accustomed to the French that they speak over here. I don't know exactly what you call it. They were able then to converse very easily with the people up in the French country.
Yes, then we have the Solomon family mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Joe Solomon, and bringing it up today, Joe Solomon's grandfather was one of the early settlers, too. They ran a store down here, well, be hard to describe it where people would know it today, but they ran a store right down here just below the theater for a good many years. And then Solly, I'm sure, who a lot of people remember, was quite an actor. He used to play on, going through school, he used to act on the stage a great deal, he and George Finlan. But then he went into the farming business, and he farmed quite extensively and shipped quite a few potatoes out, and Joey today has succeeded him in the farming business.
Yes, he sort of followed in his father's footsteps.
Yes, and his father married my Uncle Moses' daughter, Mary, who died at an early age of 35 after leaving four or five children, solid to bring up.
Yes, then we have another family, the Ossie family. They are here in the fort today, too.
Yes, and they migrated about just about this area, and there was two families, two brothers, and Joseph Ossie, who was a very fine man and a prominent merchant on the street. He ran a restaurant for a good many years, and then he went to the grocery store. And Kelly Ossie. Kelly Ossie married one of George's daughters, and after they had been here a while, they went out to Utica, New York.
And which brings up the name George.
Well, there was three brothers and one sister in that family. There was Sawyer George, and there was Gabriel George, and there was Paul Corey. Now,
this, Lois, leads me to the question of do the original settlers still have their family name, same as they had in the old country?
Yes, and certain exceptions. Now, this particular case here, the family name of these three brothers was Hannity in the old country. When they came over here, Sawyer took, called himself Sawyer George. Gabriel took, for a time being, Hannity, and then this Paul took Corey. Eventually, Gabriel changed his from Hannity to George, but Paul Corey until the very day he died, and he died as Paul Corey. There are quite a few, I would say that 75% of the people kept their names if they could at least pronounce them or spell them out in the English language.
Yes, you think there are about 40 people here now of this ancestry?
Yes, I will do.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about food, Lois. In the old country, their food certainly was different than what is here today. Do they still use the old dishes?
Yes, for that matter, my sister Celia still makes the Syrian bread, as we call it, and she even makes it for sale, and they just can't make enough. It's becoming very expensive, but still, on the other hand, they make it, and just as fast as they make it, they sell it. And we do have our own foods. I don't know what after our generation what's going to happen, but you see, my father came to the United States. So it's only one generation, you might say.
Right.
And I'm very familiar with the food. My wife is also very familiar with the food. And we make the kibbeh and the cabbage rolls, as the English people call it. We call it kusa, the mershing. We make chicken stock, the Syrian style, with lamb meat and rice. And we make string beans and lamb in the Syrian style. There's a great many of our dishes today that we still preserve, and for that matter, we're finding in a lot of the restaurants now, shish kebab. This is one of our dishes. It's the meat on the rods, and this has become one of the most favorite dishes that you can buy in most any of the restaurants.
One of mine.
Sure. They never heard of broiled meat. Take steaks and broil them over the fire. Years ago, this is, you know, about the only way we ever ate meat. We seldom ate any meat that was ever fried. And our salad, they still refer to it as Syrian salad, the oil and vinegar.
Sorry.
That came with the Lebanese people here. And you'd be surprised in traveling throughout the country how many of these dishes today you can pick up restaurants, or whether they're Lebanese or Oriental or American restaurants.
Yes, but the people are here today of Syrian ancestry, they probably use the foods that are here now, or do they on occasion go back to the old?
Well, in New York and Boston, they have an area placed on, they call the Syrian market, that you can go down there and you can buy the certain kind of nuts, the dates, the olives and pickles and things along that line. And every once in a while, if somebody's going to New York or to Boston or going by car, we will ask them if they'll bring us back certain things that, and there's pastries that they make, a great many pastries that they make. And the girls, every once in a while, will get enough energy up in there and make some today. They'll make the Easter cookies. I don't know. I don't think I'm qualified to go into the various kinds of pastries that are made today. And they, every once in a while, they get at it, and they'll make it right to this day. But I do feel that this maybe will be the last generation that will do it, because there's so much intermarriage that it's going to be hard to preserve these traditions that we've tried to hang on to over these years.
On special occasions, though, you perhaps get together.
Oh, definitely.
Not only Syrian dishes.
Yeah, not only on special occasions. Even when we have a lot of our English friends in, they like it better than we do. Actually, now that raw kibbeh that so many people are so crazy about. Oh, I eat it very lightly. It's quite a heavy dish. But I've seen people come into our homes that want to know if there was any left over so they could take some back home with them. And the food hasn't been very popular here.
Louis, at the time of a funeral in the families, what were the customs that were followed? What procedure was used?
Well, in those days, in the early days, there was no funeral home, and the body was laid out in a home, and the relatives and friends, actually it was 3 days of feasting, you might say. There was food and refreshments constantly on counter and tables at all times. And this is when they get together and meet and talk things over. And weddings were about the same. I mean, there was a feast for weeks before the wedding and celebrations a week after the wedding, you might say.
Yeah.
They display all their foods of Syrian food of all kinds.
It was more of a reunion type than the way we think of the funeral today.
That's right.
Yes.
But that has more or less gone above the board. They used to dress too in their Syrian custom clothes and do what we call the dubki, which is a Syrian dance, and that would go on for hours after hours. And, it was more or less of a reunion.
These people, being human like the rest of us, they probably had troubles and one thing or another developing.
Yes, and it prevails a great deal today among the Lebanese people. You very seldom will see a Lebanese person or family in want. Years ago, if a family or a person got into any problems financially, they were all law-abiding citizens. Truthfully, I can't ever remember any of us being in jail or anything like that. They were always law-abiding citizens, but if they needed food, they needed clothing, or they get into a financial problem, quickly they would come right to the front and help them. I remember that my dad always saying that my uncle that was up in St. Agathe needed $5,000, and my father gave him $5,000, and when my uncle died, my father got two iron beds for the $5,000, about all that was left out of his estate. But there was no demanding or asking for it or anything along that line. And that still prevails. That you'll find that's pretty deep. I know my brother George, I could go over to his place most any time and get within reason what I felt that I would need to pull me out of any kind of a circumstance.
This still goes with the old saying that blood's thicker than water.
That is right.
Yeah. Well, Lewis, I guess that about winds it up then.
A lady by the name of Beverly Brummer, she is really sweet. Can sing too, so that makes her double pleasure. It's called Don't Say You Don't Remember.